Well, what are you good at? Instead of going and working at a video production company, could you go buy one? You already know how to run the business because you're in it. You're a video producer. I like people actually to do what I call their unfair advantage. Where can you find the thing that you already know how to do and then just apply it to a business you want to buy?
Cody Sanchez is a business investor and content creator with over 3 million followers. As the visionary behind Contrarian Thinking, she empowers people to harness unconventional methods for financial success.
The first business you buy is most definitely not the last business you'll buy.
I want simple businesses because I think simpleness makes you money and complexity makes you sound smart. Second thing I look for in a business is I want it to be profitable. I want to get paid day one. And that means that I need a business that has cash flow and is income producing. The third thing I look for is I want it to be...
I'm Erica Kohlberg, and you're listening to the Erica Taught Me podcast. Hi, it's Erica Kohlberg. And before we dive into today's podcast episode, I have an exciting announcement that can help you save an extra $1,000 without having to penny pinch or change your lifestyle. On Monday, I'm running my free 5-day savings challenge, where you'll discover simple and creative ways that you can save extra money every month. And whatever you want to do with that extra money is up to you. I'll just show you how to save it. The challenge is totally free to join. All you need to do is go to erica.com/go. Erica is with a K, and you can secure your spot. By the way, these strategies that you're going to discover can help you easily save money, whether you're a budgeting novice or a finance expert. And they're going to get better and better throughout the week. But I have to tell you, I'm so excited about this and don't want you to miss out. In November of last year, we ran a savings challenge and had over 200,000 people sign up. And on average, people saved $1,005 that month through what they learned in the challenge. That means our challengers collectively saved over $200 million. So trust me when I say you don't want to miss out on this one. And the deadline to sign up to be part of this free challenge is Sunday, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. So make sure you secure your spot and get free access today. Again, that's erica.com/go, erica.com/go. See you inside. So when you are looking to invest in a business, what are some of the things that you look for?
I want to keep it stupid simple. I think money gets sacrificed on the altar of complexity. So I want simple businesses because I think simpleness makes you money and complexity makes you sound smart. So we're not looking for anything that says IP or proprietary biotech, see you later. Nope. Second thing I look for in a business is I want it to be profitable. I want to get paid day one. And that means that I need a business that has cash flow and is income producing. The third thing I look for is I want it to be old, which is bizarre for people on the internet. But actually, there's something called the Lindy effect. So the longer something's been around, the more likely it'll be to continue to be around. And so I buy old, simple businesses that are easy to understand, that are profitable. And then the last thing that I look for typically is I want to have an operator. So at this stage of my career, I don't want to run the business. When I first started out, I did. And so I need something where I have a center of expertise because that decreases my risk. If somebody else already knows how to run the production studio, then I don't have to figure out how to both buy the business and run the thing.
So when you're looking for the old ones, are we talking about old businesses that have been established for many years or the model itself is old?
Ideally both, but I err on the side of the business actually being established because I want to see the historical taxes. I want to see how much money they made year over year and what the growth chart looks like. You know, we were all taught up and to the right, you know, I want a hockey stick growth. That's what a good company looks like. Well, the companies that go up like this, they also sometimes come down like this. And yet very simple businesses like a shipping business, they typically kind of grow very steadily, 3-4% per year. And so that's what I'm looking for, that 3% rule.
Got it. What was your very first business you bought?
The very first business I bought was actually a cross-market exchange. So basically, I was working in Latin America at the time. And so I was helping people invest in the southern border. And so I bought something called Selling South. That business was not a very good transaction. The one that I talk about the most publicly because it's easier to understand was a laundromat. So that was my very first, like what I call Main Street business.
And take me through how the economics of a laundromat work.
Well, the best part of a laundromat is if you can't understand how to run a laundromat, you probably shouldn't own a business. So it's a very simple gateway drug business. And so basically, economics of a laundromat, what's interesting actually, is that every business, there's what's called the Pareto's principle, right? 20% of things drive 80% of your business. It's true in profits and expenses. So with a laundromat, what I like about it is if you want to analyze a laundromat, you really have to look at three things. You have to look at how much money do you spend on lease or on your overhead for the entity where it sits. You have to look at the historical financials, but really you need to look at the utilities because, as you can imagine, heat and water. And then you need to look at the ability for you to do cash collection. So a lot of times, like new laundromats, they actually lose a lot of money from payment processing, whereas old laundromats, they lose a lot of money because the owner doesn't report it all. They didn't want to keep it from the IRS. So those are like the three main things you have to look for in a laundromat business.
And new versus old, meaning the old ones have the coins that you put in and then the new ones you just tap a credit card?
That's right. Yeah. And you have to think a little bit about who your user is. It's like every business, right? Like I want to sell hair products, well, do I want to sell them to people with beautiful, long, curly hair? Or do I want to sell them to people who don't have much hair and they want to grow more of it? It's really important that you know the difference between the two. That's your target market. Well, laundromat land, as you can imagine, there's a lot of people that are unbanked, which means that for whatever reason, they can't actually get access to a credit card. And so you need to either usually have access to them to be able to use cash. A lot of people who use laundromats only use cash, and or some sort of, you know, debit card or payment card, which people can get if they can't get a credit card.
Okay, so let's say I am very excited about the laundromat. I say, Cody, help me buy a laundromat. What is our first step?
So there's 10 steps to business buying. Your very first step is actually going to be, what do you want to buy specifically? So a lot of people go, I want to buy a laundromat. And they go, I know that's because I just talked about it on the internet a lot. Do me a solid and don't buy a laundromat for your first business. Here's why. Because laundromats are a great way to understand the business. They're not the greatest way to make money. And so you can buy one to start, but it's sort of like the first house that you move into is probably not going to be the house that you want to have for the rest of your life, right? And so you need to understand that with buying a business. But that's what's called your deal box. In finance, we might call that our investment thesis. So where are we really going to start figuring out what is a good deal for Erica? And then your second step, if you're like, shut up, Cody, I'm buying a laundromat. Okay, fine. So if we want to buy a laundromat, then your next question is going to be, well, how do I find the deal? That's called origination, right? So how do I go out and source a laundromat to buy? And then your next step is going to be, well, now that I'm searching for laundromats, how do I figure out if this laundromat is really worth what they say it is and what's happening inside of it, which is called due diligence. So that's like, are you lying to me? Then the next step is valuation. So like, how do I determine what this thing's worth? How do I run that through a couple of calculators or spreadsheets? And then after you've done that, you can determine how to negotiate. So like, well, you know, you're an expert at this. How do we get somebody to do something that we want them to do? And how do we work within their constraints that they want? And then after negotiation, you get to contracts. So how do we eventually paper this, make sure that all of the information is proper? And then finally, we get to, well, now I own a business. What are my first 90 days of running the business? And there's like a few steps that we add in there so that people can get more technical with it. But those are the overarching steps of how you buy a business.
Got it. Okay. So start me with step one then.
Well, if you are going to go buy a laundromat today, I would really want you to, we have something called the 3-9-12 principle. So the 3-9-12 principle for buying businesses is this. I want you to spend your first 3 months learning how to buy a business. Doesn't need to be from me. There's plenty of people who talked about it on the internet, but I want you to go learn every single step of the deal journey. Where people mess up is they go, I want to buy a business. Let's go find one. It's like, hold up. Instead, I want you to kind of obsess on, do I understand how to make a deal? Do I understand what the terms look like? So I want you to spend 3 months doing that. After you've spent the 3 months, you're going to spend something like 9 months searching for the deal, talking to owners, analyzing the financials, doing due diligence, until finally you might find a business to buy. And then when you find that business to buy, most small businesses, if you're going to close the transaction, take anywhere from 30 to 120 days. That's why we say that 12 months to close. So if you have the 3-9-12 principle, your first thing is first you learn, then you can invest, and not the other way around.
And what's the big reason why, instead of starting my own laundromat, renting the place, getting all of the machines, I would want to buy an existing one?
Lots of reasons, but first think about it like this. One, the average small, well, it's actually, let's do it this way. Entrepreneurs on average for a new company, so founders, they make somewhere between $40,000 to $60,000 a year. It's not a lot of money. Also, most small businesses, if you go and start one from startup land, they don't make money for the first 3 or 4 years. So best case, you're making $40,000 or $60,000. Worst case, you're making zero and you're spending money for 3 to 4 years. I think most people don't have money to wait for 3 to 4 years of potential pay. Second is if you go to start a laundromat yourself, you're going to quickly find, well, machines are expensive. Like one laundry machine, one washer could cost you $30,000. So you're buying like 25 Corollas, right, to put into that bad boy. Well, it's hard to get money for that. Now, there are financing mechanisms, but you have to have collateral, right? Something to hold against the fact that you might not be able to repay this. They want to be able to grab something back. And so when you go to buy a business, the cool part is, instead of them analyzing Erica and saying, should we give money to Erica? They analyze Laundromat Austin, number one. Mm-hmm. And so if Laundromat Austin, number one, is making $300,000 a year in profit and has been in existence for 3 to 5 years, you can get a loan on that as opposed to Erica, which may not be loanable because, you know, you may only make X and not be able to get a loan for the same amount of money to start your business. So that's why.
So a starter laundromat, how much, I know it's going to vary, but how much would I have to put up front and then how much could I expect to make from it?
If you were going to buy one or start one?
Buy one.
So if you're going to buy a laundromat, the average laundromat makes somewhere around $300,000 a year. Median's probably slightly less, but let's say the average laundromat makes $300,000 a year. Okay. If you want to get a loan, usually the SBA will loan you anywhere from 70 to 90% of the purchase price. So let's make it easy and make it 90. And let's say that then you only need 10% of $300,000. So, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars as opposed to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the other interesting part about laundromats is you can use laundromat financing for the equipment. So if the SBA won't give you money, that's where Uncle Sam says, hey, I want to support small business, so I'm going to give out loans for normal people to buy small businesses. If Uncle Sam says, God, these laundromat financials are awful, which is probably the case, then you can go to a machine provider and say, I want to buy this laundromat. Here's what all the machines are inside of it. Would you actually help me finance the deal? And they might do that. And for that, you might have to replace some machines.
Okay. So assuming 300,000, maybe I put 30,000 up front, then how much am I going to start making from it?
Well, laundromat and small business margins are anywhere from 10 to 30%. So if you think about a business that does, you know, let's say $1 million in revenue, you know that you're not making a ton, right? We're making somewhere between $100,000 and $300,000, depending on how we operate the business. But in a laundromat, my first laundromat, maybe $67,000-ish a year. That was profit. So that was technically put in my pocket. So I put it back in the business, but I could have put it in my pocket. So I think, you know, you can make anywhere from $60,000 to a couple $100,000 on a laundromat. The biggest laundromat I ever had was $5 million for one in annual revenue. So, you know, they can be bigger. But that one had what's called wash and fold, which is like super industry technical. But basically, like, that's where a lot of the margin is. It's where somebody, you know, comes to your house, you grab a bag, they put all their clothes in it, and then you go and do the laundry for them and drop it off. That's more complex, though, than most people want to run.
Now I feel convinced. It's like you came here to sell me a laundromat.
Nice meeting you, Bella. I'd be like, in with a lawyer and laundromat. No two L's.
Do you have a bunch of them still?
So we sold most of our laundromats last year. We still have some. But, you know, what you'll kind of find is the first business you buy is most definitely not the last business you'll buy. So
is it for you because it's hard to find those operators and $60,000 a year doesn't really make a dent in your business?
That's exactly right. Yeah, I have to have a business that can drive enough revenue to be meaningful for a portfolio that's now nine figures, right? Mm-hmm. So $60,000 is going to be a lot of work for that. I have to have a lot of laundromats. We had a group of them here called the Fools that I invested in. And I think that group at the end, I believe this is public, was somewhere around $3 to $5 million in annual revenue. And so you can get big enough for them. But I like starting there because it's sort of like real estate too, you know? You might buy like a single family house for your very first one, and then eventually you could buy a lot of them or multifamily houses. So that's why I don't buy those as much anymore.
Got it. I feel like for people, I'm really into the laundromat now, but for people who think, okay, that sounds a little overwhelming, what is one step of an easier business to start with?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I think, especially for this audience, which I imagine is a lot of people who are super internet savvy, you know, they're online, they're young. You could do this exact same process with anything else. It doesn't have to be boring businesses. So if they're like, God, I don't even know how to wash my own clothes. I can't imagine owning a laundromat. Okay. Well, what are you good at? So for instance, you know, Tanner used to run a video production company, right? And so instead of going and working at a video production company, could you go buy one? You know, you already know how to run the business because you're in it. You're a video producer. And so, I like people actually to do what I call their unfair advantage. Where can you find the thing that you already know how to do and then just apply it to a business you want to buy. If you're an accountant, can you go and buy an accounting firm? If you're a lawyer, you're in a really unique position because other people can't own legal firms in the U.S. unless you're actually an attorney. And so you could go on and you could actually buy them. And so, I have a guy that's part of our group, and he's bought 5 of them in Australia from being an attorney inside of.
It seems obvious, right? The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the better your profits are. But with higher expenses for things like materials and employees, everything costs more, and so you make less. What do smart businesses do? They graduate to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors, and you know, I'm all about efficiency. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Erica for all the details. That's netsuite.com/Erica. Erica is with a K. I'll put the link in the show notes.
What about vending machine businesses?
Yeah.
I know this is very sexy. I'll take a talk. Very sexy. Everybody loves vending machines. I think here's the truth. I know people that make a lot of money with vending machines. I have a friend that does tens of thousands of dollars a month as a young guy with a few vending machines, and he started out with a couple of $1,000. So that's the sexy part about it. You're like, can I have very few money and make a lot of money pretty quickly on a relative basis? And the answer is yes. Just be prepared that I think you have a year runway with that. So like with a vending machine business, you're going to do it for a year, and then you're going to realize something which all truly wealthy people know. Every business is a vending machine business. What does that mean? It's all the same. Like whether you run a video production studio or a laundromat or a vending machine, you need to make more money than you spend. You need to hire intelligent people. They need to do the things that you want them to do. You have to be able to get financing and you have to have systems and processes to do it. And so once you start the vending machine game, at a certain point, you'll go, oh crap, I'd have to have like 10,000 of these things to make 10 million bucks and I actually make 10 million bucks. So I think vending machines are totally doable. Just realize there'll be a point, and people on the internet will tell you, where they're like, God, this is an awful business because it's hard and you have to keep doing it. You're like, they all are. That's true. But it's totally possible to make money from it, for sure.
What businesses do you think are absolutely overhyped that you hate?
Yeah, there's a lot. Okay, let's talk about, there's three businesses I really hate that you should never buy or start. Restaurants, only do it if you cannot help but continue to cook. And even then, probably double check it because nobody actually wants to come to your restaurant as much as they say that they will. And they won't, actually. The second is retail. Everybody has this idea of a little mom and pop shop and to put in your favorite clothes or you have a little cigar bar. Don't do it. It's a really hard business. It's super expensive to get real estate in that space. And think about this for a second. Retail's crazy because you pay for like the clothes for the next season 3 months before they ship them to you. And then you have to try to sell them, and then you're buying into the next season. So you're basically on this hamster wheel of trying to get more money to sell a thing that nobody really buys in person anymore. They buy it online. And then the third business that I really don't like are hotels. And the reason I don't like hotels is I think they're real estate wrapped in a business. What business do you have where at 2 in the morning you are expected to deliver some sort of 24-hour room service? Not fun for me. Now, many people make money in all these businesses. I just think that it's harder than it needs to be. You have to be an incredible operator. I'm not that smart, so I want to run in businesses where I can win even if I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed.
How are you finding the best operators for your business?
This is only interesting to people who really want to make money. They have to understand how to get talent, the ultimate game. And so operators are just, can you sell somebody a dream that is bigger than theirs consistently so that they see themselves standing within it? And I think the best way to get great operators is to sell a really big dream. And the second best way to find operators is to just look for competency. Like we are in a world in which most people literally can't make a dollar out of $5. And so if you can find somebody like, you know, for instance, I once hired a guy who was the valet at a car rental place or at a hotel that I was staying at. And the reason that I hired the guy that was the valet is because I had come into this place a few different times. He recognized me. He remembered my name. He proactively went and got my car. Every time I came back, he would like check in with the person at the front desk to see when I was coming back each time. Now, is any of that rocket science? No. It's like that extra 10% that nobody does. So every time you see somebody do that, even if it's your like little cousin that seems to always be throwing together a lemonade stand instead of watching Netflix, attract those people and give them little tiny opportunities to take risk. And that is usually how I find my best operators.
Are they mostly then homegrown? So they start at a lower level within the company, or do you find that finding good operators existing from other companies is a good strategy?
Both work. It depends on what you're good at. So when you're early, you're not going to be able to probably attract top level talent, right? Because you're just figuring it out. I think it's easier to sell a dream to somebody who sees you as a few steps ahead of them. And so I might start that way. But once you've become established, the best way to know, like the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Like the best ability to predict success is having had success in the past. And so if I was running a new business and I was running an agency online, I would want to go fire, like you did, somebody who had already been a top agent somewhere else and just plug them into my ecosystem. I want proven talent. And even better than proven talent is proven known talent. This person has already done the job. And oh, by the way, I've already worked with them in some capacity. So I kind of know if they're good or not. And those are my best operators typically.
For most people buying their first business, they're going to come in and they're actually going to be the operator for that business. And then it's really level two and level three where you start to hire these operators, right?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, get your hands dirty, know what it feels like, and then you can ask somebody else to dirty theirs. I think that's just a good motto to live by. Not to mention, it's hard to know if somebody's doing well at a thing until you've actually done the thing. And so once you've run a couple of businesses, you see that most businesses ripple and rhyme. But in the beginning, you really can't tell the difference between incompetence and a plan that isn't working. And so you need to know the difference between the two. Also, I think it's a cool opportunity. Like a lot of people these days, I saw this statistic the other day. It was fascinating. And the statistic is there's four types of people. The first person is unemployed by choice. The second is unemployed, not by choice. The third is employed by choice. And the fourth is employed, not by choice. I mean, they'd like to not work if they didn't have to. And of those four types of people, who are the happiest? The people who are employed, even if they're not by choice. And we're talking about orders of magnitude happier. And so I think the internet's told us a little bit of a lie. And the lie is get as much money as you can, doing as little work as possible, and then I'll be happy. And it's just not true. You just might hate your job that you're in right now. Find a different job, find better teammates and better bosses. Become the boss if you want to, but work because otherwise it turns out we're actually more anxious, depressed, and unhappy than ever.
I like working.
I know, me too. It's well, once you, I mean, you probably hated some parts of being a lawyer, I would guess.
I hated having someone control my time.
But now I bet you work more than you did then, but you like it more.
I do. That's the real secret is you think you're running away from the hours, but you're actually running away from the lack of autonomy.
It's totally true. Yeah. Nobody likes to be owned. And so if you can be in either an organization where it feels like a team, and you are an owner of your segment of the business, that's incredible. But if it feels like you're a cog in the wheel, that there's a reason why cogs break all the time because the pressure is not the funnest.
You guys know that I love investing because you know that if your money is just sitting in a bank account, you're losing out to inflation every single year. That's why you invest it so that it grows for you without you having to put in any extra work. I've been using an investing app called Webull for almost 4 years, and I had them do something really special for my listeners. By using my link to sign up today, you can get between 6 to 12 fractional shares for free. All you need to do is open an account and deposit any amount, even a dollar, to claim your free shares. So just by depositing a dollar, you'll get between 6 to 12 free fractional shares. And if you're wondering what to actually invest in, we talk all about investing in episode 28. So go ahead and listen to that episode. To claim your free shares through my special link, just go to ericataughtme.com/invest or click the link in the show notes. And it's Erica with a K. Again, that's ericataughtme.com/invest. If you're listening, let me guess, you have a passcode on your phone. And let me take another wild guess and say that you have a password on your computer. But why are so many of us okay just being completely unprotected online? We have no idea who has all our personal information online and whether it's the good guys or the bad guys who might be selling your information or worse. We're talking spammers, telemarketers, robocallers, people who want to know more about you and even where you live. My sister had her data leaked online, and because of that, her identity was stolen. And it was a nightmare to deal with. We had to lock down all her credit cards just for starters. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Aura, a sponsor of this episode. Aura can identify data brokers exposing your info and submit opt-out requests on your behalf. When I discovered it, I knew I had to try it out, just to see if my information had been leaked online, which they let me see instantly after I signed up. And get this, for my audience, they're offering a free 14-day trial so you can see if your personal information has been leaked online. To find out now, go to ericataughtme.com/aura to claim your free 14-day trial. Erica with a K, and Aura is spelled A-U-R-A. Again, that's ericataughtme.com/aura, and I'll also leave the link in the show notes.
But I think that's incredible what you teach is that you can buy these small businesses and eventually and earn enough income from these businesses that it funds your lifestyle. Like even when you're saying from a laundromat, you can make $60,000 a year, that's plenty for most people's expenses, right?
100%. I mean, you and I probably don't have to work anymore, right? Like I could not work anymore. I don't need to make more money. So why would I choose to work more than I've ever worked before? Because it's actually super enjoyable and I'm having a fun time and I really like our team. And I think that we have a unique mission. And so what I think most people should do is not go out and not be an employee anymore, but go out and have option B. Like we're going to have a time next month where everybody in my team, we sit down and I talk to them about their finances because I want them to choose to work with us, not have to work with us. And there's a big difference. I call it the FU fund. Like the second that I don't want to work with you anymore, I have this backup account where I can go, Cody, stop being a dictator about YouTube. I'm out of here, right? And I think that's what people want. And you're right. It takes much less than you realize. Without me running all the businesses, we probably, it's not only, but it's not that much for our total income. You know, we probably only need a couple $100K to live, even though our income may be way above that, because I'm not that into flying private and doing all these crazy things. And most people don't need that anyway.
No. Okay. We've talked about the laundromat. We've talked about vending machines. What is another business that you think is actually a good one to start?
Couple things. I think the easiest businesses to start today that you're seeing a ton of them are also the businesses that are the least likely to continue in the future and the hardest to stay profitable. So what are the most prevalent businesses everybody keeps building? Agencies. I mean, you run one, you know. You don't have to have CapEx to start an agency, but it's highly intensive from a service perspective. It's pretty profitable because you don't have a bunch of overhead or things that cost you money, but simultaneously, you always have to add another person for every level of more money that you want to make. Mm-hmm. As opposed to if you had a productized service, that would be like one level better. So if you had an agency that was like, all we do is we design websites for X type of company, there's a 12-step process we use, you plug into the process, and that's productized. We don't do RFPs, we don't do anything custom, we don't negotiate with vendors. Like this is it, it's our one thing. And then the next level from that would be, do you have an actual product that you could sell, right? You know, you don't go to a coffee shop company and that sells mugs or something and say, well, I'd like a custom mug, you know, made, it's like, here's the mugs, pick a mug, any mug. And so I think if you want to win at making money in the game of business, you have to make sure you're playing the right game. And this is where I think most people get wrong, is there are so many options for quick money. They don't have a good mechanism for how to judge if a business is good or not. Like, you know how to judge a job if it's good. It's like, is the salary high enough for what I want? Do they have a good vacation? Can I have some flexibility on work from home or not? And do I like the work that's happening here? And I think we need the same thing for business. I think agencies are really easy to start. Hard to make a ton of profit on them without a lot of people continuously. So some of the other companies that are businesses that I think are interesting are businesses where they are slightly less people, slightly more process. So that might be something like a car wash, let's say. Car wash, the bummer though, is they're really expensive, whereas an agency is not. So I don't think there's a perfect business. There's just, what do you want? You know, do you want to spend more upfront or do you want to spend more long-term?
And do you believe in focusing your attention on one business first?
Yes. It's really hard to do multiple things at once well. I think there's a very simple process. It's do one thing, get really good at the one thing. When you're good at the one thing, hire a person who can do that one thing for you. Then get that person really good at that one thing. Then go out and find a new next thing. And most people jump from like one thing to the next thing to the next thing. And they forget the let's get really good and then let's backfill ourselves. And let's make sure that person is good that I backfilled myself with.
Yeah. So if I were to take everything away from you that you have right now, but you retain your knowledge, and I tell you, you need to get to $1 million as quickly as possible, what are you going to do? What businesses are you going to buy or start?
I'm going to find the most expensive thing that I can to sell, and I'm going to go sell it to as many people as I can. Most people, when they answer this question, I always find it funny because they just tell you the thing that they're doing. They go, podcasting, great way to make money, you know? And I don't think that that's true, actually. There's a lot that would need to happen for that. If I didn't have my network and nobody knew who I was and I couldn't call anybody and all I had was my skill set to start, the easiest way to make more money is to show immediately that you're valuable to a company. What is the easiest way to show you're immediately valuable for a company? Make them money, right? And I always think there's like three ways you can show you're valuable to a company. You can make them money, you can cut their costs, or you can decrease pain for the owner of the business, which would be like operationalizing the business. But decreasing pain doesn't have a dollar amount associated with it. Cutting expenses means the business has to agree with you on something to do one way or the other. Selling more stuff that they already have, no business owner goes, nope, not today. I don't want to bring in more revenue. And so that's probably where I would start. I would go and try to find the best product that was the highest dollar amount because I'd take a pretty hefty commission on it. And that's how I'd get to the first mill.
And do you think that would be a services business where it's a marketing agency perhaps?
I don't know that it actually matters what type of business it is. Just, you know, the way you make more money is that you really understand the value you drive to the business and then you negotiate as much of that value as you can paid out to you in a win-win for you and the business. It's another reason most people don't know how to make more money because when they go to negotiate, they go, I'd like a 10% raise. And you're like, great, I want a unicorn. Why? Why should I give you 10%? And now if instead they go, listen, if they said, I make $100,000 in this company, I have summarized that I drive $500,000 in revenue through the company from the sales that I bring in. Let's say it's the easiest way to do it. If I was to drive $600,000 in revenue for the company, could I take an extra $25,000 in salary? Of course, the business owner is going to go, that's actually pretty reasonable. Yeah, if you can show me you did that, I will give you that. And so that's why I'd go, maybe it wouldn't even be the product. It'd be like, can I high ticket where I can, good product, I can negotiate with the owner for a percentage of the sales. And I would do that for my first million. And while I was doing that, I would try to figure out ways to do it for myself.
Mm-hmm. What do you think for your business personally right now is holding you back from getting to the next level?
Talent. The only way a business goes from, you know, 10 million to 100 million, then 100 million to multiple 100 million is you either have to up-level the people you have or you have to find new people. It's always a who problem. Every how is always a who problem. And the who could just be you, you know? Like if you don't know how to make more money, you have a who problem, which is you are missing a skill set that you need in order to get to the next level. And if you can think about it that way, then you go, oh, okay, well, who do I know that is making more money than I am? And can I just talk to that person who's a few steps ahead of me or even one half a step ahead of me and figure out what they know that I don't? And can they be the solution to my problem? And so that's the reason any of our businesses won't go bigger is typically always, I don't have the right person who has the right answer.
Are you hiring quickly? Hiring? No. Are you hiring slowly, firing quickly?
I do. Let's see. It depends on the role. I think it's a good idea to have the slow hire, fire fast mentality because it's really disruptive to people's lives. Like how horrible, all these I feel for like the young woman who is getting fired, you know, on a Zoom call because the CEO of a company decided to hire 1,000 people and then laid them off, you know, 3 months later. I actually think that's terrible and that should sit on that man's soul because every time somebody chooses your company, they're spending most of their life with you. They are choosing to upend their lives and to spend most of their waking moments on your dream. And that is a huge responsibility. And so I actually think it's a sickness that CEOs are like, yeah, whatever. And also, we're not even going to tell you why we're letting you go. And we're doing a huge layoff. I actually think it's terrible. So I do like to hire slow, except what we do often is we'll do contractors instead of full-time employees. So in a lot of the businesses where it's applicable, legal, possible, we'll say, hey, why don't you try us on a project basis? And the reason I like to try project basis is that I can give more people a shot on goal. You know, if I have to screen every single person for an employee in this crazy litigious world, as you know, I am not going to hire as many people. And I like to give people opportunities where possible. So that's a kind of like a hack. Like before you hire somebody, if you can, especially when you're just starting off, you 1,000% can. Don't bring them on full time. Just hire somebody part time for a project, one project. And if they don't perform once, the best predictor of how they're going to perform in the future is how they just did.
Something we're doing from April for our marketing team is we're looking for a head of growth. But what we're going to do is essentially frame it as a competition. Yeah. We fly you out to where I am that month. It's going to be somewhere international. You spend 30 days with us, along with other people who are fighting for the same position. We do a big launch at the end of that 4 weeks. And whoever does the best, first of all, everyone gets a little commission from it if it exceeds a benchmark. And whoever does the best gets the full-time offer as CMO or head of growth.
Love that.
So yeah, try.
I love it. I think it's brilliant because you're using the new economy, the attention economy, super smart. I think there's a good and a bad side. The good side is you're going to have incredibly viral content and you'll probably err on the side of young, hungry, and willing to take a big risk on you. You'll probably also find people who are super loyal to your mission because they'll be like, I wouldn't do this for anybody else. So those things are all incredible. On the flip side, what you won't find are probably super experienced people who have already done the thing, right? And so it really, I think these, it's a good way to go back and forth in your company because you need both sides. I mean, we have a few people at our company that have like 25 years work experience that are incredible. They would never do that. But on the other side, we need to have those young guns that want to lay it all on the line. I think one bias I've seen sometimes with creators' companies is they bias too much on the young side. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is we all need adult supervision, including me, especially creators. We're insufferable. And so, you know, it's nice having a balance between the two. It's kind of the same with mentors. I think you need three mentors. You need like a younger mentor than you who can teach you the up and coming thing, who's even more TikTok savvy than you are. Then you need the mentor who's like almost on the same level. So it'd be like, okay, the two of us, we're going to talk about this and I'm going to learn from you and you don't know it, but you're mentoring me. And then the third is that person who's in front of you. They've already kind of done the thing. They're the wise old sage. And I think it's the same thing with employees, actually. You need all three versions of those. And sometimes creators err on the side of like too many young idiots and, you know, love us young idiots. But we have a certain profile and that is not a holistic business made.
What do you think is a business that isn't popular yet on social media, hasn't made the rounds like the vending machine businesses, that is going to be popular in the next year or two?
I think one of the next businesses to go really big is services related to AI. We started talking about this a little bit, but if you're young right now, you inherently know so much more about how to use technology, AI, ChatGPT, than even me, you know, and I'm in my 30s. And so this young generation, you are going to be able to charge an obscene amount of money for work that other people think is really hard. It's actually not. And so if you are at all interested in being, you know, a single entrepreneur, a solopreneur that makes hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not a couple million by yourself or with very few team members, I think that is the route to do it. We're hiring a consultant, for instance, right now to see how we could use AI across multiple of our businesses. I mean, this guy charges like $10,000 a month. That's one person. And we do a couple phone calls and that's the only deliverable. And so I think the crazy way to make money in the future is going to be, where are my parents idiots with technology? And what do I know about that that's different? And how can I just ask a few older people that I might know who run a business, have they thought about this for their business? And you could almost just go out to your parents' friends right now or people that are slightly older than you who own businesses and say, hey, have you guys thought about integrating AI into your business? How have you done it? Have you used ChatGPT? Do you understand the difference between that and Grok and some of the other platforms out there? Have you even understood the difference between, you know, Canva images and using PowerPoint? And the moral of the story is going to be most of them haven't. And so I think that would be a huge opportunity for young people to make money without a lot of risk.
Mm-hmm. And the reason it works is when we were talking about earlier, the three things that business owners want, it's one, they want less stress. One, two, they want more money. And three, they want less costs. AI really would fix all of those things if done 100%. Properly. So it's an easy sell to go to someone and say, hey, look, I'm going to help you integrate AI into your business, and it's going to make you more money, it's going to save you more headaches, and it's going to save you more costs, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we looked at one business that we had, and we were employing a lot of people in a role, which was incredible, except they kept leaving the role. So they didn't like it that much. And we replaced them with a mixture of AI chatbots and VAs in the Philippines. And this is where people like scream and yell because you move, you know, work outside of the US. But the moral of the story is nobody's supposed to stay at minimum wage. Your goal should be, I want to work at this amount, and then I want to stack my skills so I can have a higher level and then a higher level and get paid more and more. And when you're young, man, now's the time to learn as much as possible about this. I would be taking, you know, as many online classes as I could about how to figure out AI and tech as possible.
What do you think the three mistakes that young people are making are that keep them poor right now?
You will always stay poor if you listen to TikTok. Rule number one. Like the number one thing people are doing that will make them poor is they're listening to other poor people and they're taking advice. Never take advice from somebody who hasn't actually achieved the thing that you want to achieve. And the best way to determine if they've achieved it is you see that they've been successful for a long period of time, which means ipso facto, almost everybody that you're listening to that is 20 and younger has not actually achieved anything you want to achieve yet. Be really careful of young gurus. Second thing is assuming that working less is better because the man is going to get you. And that's actually not true. You want to work more and learn more when you're young, and then you can be the man, but cooler, in a fewer amount of years. And I think a lot of people are sacrificing themselves at the altar of how annoying jobs can be. And they're going to look back in 10 years and go, why didn't somebody tell me that I should have taken the pain now? And the third thing, I think, is distraction. Distraction is the reason why you are not achieving the things you want to achieve. And it's actually not your fault. It's so hard right now with the internet and everything we have at our fingertips. Most people actually want to achieve something big. You want something big. You just get so distracted by every single opportunity, even if you think you're learning, that you don't know what to do next. And so I would obsess on one idea. How can I actually own my attention? And every time somebody else sucks my attention away into something negative or not making a bunch of money, I want to take my attention away from it. Because energy, six packs, and six figures, it's all contagious.
One of the things that I do, and my entire team does it, it's from back in the law firm. So at the law firm, you bill clients by every 6 minutes, which means you have to be so strict about knowing where your time is going because you're charging those clients $1,000 an hour, right? So every 6 minutes, you know exactly what you're up to. So even now, my entire day is dictated by this. It's called Clockify. It's a free app. And every time I do a new task, I put this Clockify on. So I know that I've spent an hour filming this podcast. Then I go and check emails for 15 minutes. And the sign of a good day is when I don't have that many items that I've done. I've really focused in and I've done 3 hours on this project, 4 hours concentrated on this project. A bad day when I've gotten distracted a lot is when I see a lot of line items at the end of the day where I've done 10 minutes here and 20 minutes here. So everyone in our team does it too. And at the end of each day, it's a public Slack channel. They send us all their Clockify reports. So you can see where their time has gone, but it's more so for the self-accountability. It's like, am I getting distracted or am I doing really focused, concentrated work? And then another thing we implemented is Deep Work Wednesday, where on Wednesdays, everyone works from home. You do deep work. You're not expected to be on Slack, on emails. You're really just focused and concentrated on what you're supposed to be doing.
I love that. What was the pushback? Like, what did people tell you when you originally wanted them to do this? Because I can't imagine people were thrilled at first.
The thing is, with Clockify, I've been doing it for so many years that everyone on the team started it from the day that they started at the team. So it's not like, I feel like if I would have started it a year after everyone started, people would have been furious, but it's part of the routine and the habit. Yeah. And it's really for that self-accountability. It's not because I'm looking at what they're doing each hour.
Maybe the main thing that keeps you poor when you're young is who you decide to surround yourself with. And maybe even most importantly, who you decide to work for. Because we mimic those that we think we want to be like. So whether we think we want to or not, this mimetic desire kicks in and we start following the repetitions and the habits of the people that we look up to. And so I wish I had realized earlier that the people I worked for, you couldn't pay me to be them. And it was at the point that I realized that I left finance entirely. I was like, I looked up the chain. I saw a bunch of people that were not happily in relationships, that were not happy in life, that were not healthy, that had a ton of money and Ferraris, and I've never wanted one of those. And so I saw all these people and thought, God, what am I doing? If I am mimicking the patterns that got these people here, but I don't want their life, I need to leave. And so I think if you're in a company in which, you know, the person that heads the company, you don't actually want their life and you don't look up to them, you should probably bail. Because you can learn something incredible from a CEO that you think, God, I wish I was less distracted. Well, actually, Erica has a method that she teaches all of her team members where I get paid to learn how to be less distracted by working for Erica. That's actually incredible. Okay, I'd sign up for that.
I think that's brilliant. No, that's one of the reasons I quit too, is I looked ahead, 10 years ahead, and said, what would my life be as a partner at this law firm? And it's true. Everyone is depressed, divorced, and wealthy. Yeah. And I only wanted one of those things.
Exactly. Yeah. And guess what? Like, money sucks if you're not happy. Then you're just mad and you have a fast car. Like, that's not actually that much fun, despite the internet that shows you that all the time. I promise you, get a big box full of Rolexes like the other people on YouTube and have a miserable life surrounding you, and your life will still be miserable. But if you can figure out a way to make enough money where you can pay for the things that you want to pay for, a business that doesn't cause you inordinate amounts of stress, humans that you actually like to be around you, a purpose that's bigger than yourself, that you feel like you are needed to serve, it's actually pretty easy to be happy. Except, you know, when you think about it, young people today, we got served so many lies. We got told you don't need to have friends one-on-one. You could just have them on the internet. And in fact, life likes will make you feel better. When in fact, friendships are one of the most important things to happiness. We got told family's really an issue. And by and large, why would you want to get married and have kids? Because look what it did to our parents. We wouldn't want to do that. And it turns out that family is actually one of the biggest things you can do to become happier. We also got told that, we don't want to work that much. We've been enslaved in all these different ways. So we shouldn't do it, even though actually work seems to make us happier than anything else. So we got sold kind of this bag of goods for whatever reason. And so I think if you're young and you wanted to like quickly turn around your happiness, you'd just like eat slightly healthier, drink less, hang out with friends more often, try to have a relationship that's meaningful and do work that matters. And then you probably will be both rich and happy.
Beautiful. So we have a closing tradition. The podcast is called Erica Taught Me, but really today is all about Cody Taught Me. So what do you want people to walk away saying, Cody taught me this?
Cody taught me that you can achieve every single thing you want to achieve through ownership. And ownership means both ownership of a business or ownership of a business line, but also ownership of every single bad thing that has ever happened to you. And I think it is this magical word that nobody talks about, where if you decide it is all in my control, and anything that happens, good, bad, or otherwise, is up to me, that your world can completely and utterly change. And so I hope they walk away with that. I hope you get rich. I hope you do. But who cares about being rich if you're happy, mean, and miserable?
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This is so much fun.
If you've enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a review. It really helps support what we're doing. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next Tuesday on a brand new episode of Erica Taught Me.